Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm David Alan Miller, and I'm delighted to be speaking with one of my absolute favorite artists in the world, the legendary soprano Dawn Upshaw. Dawn, thanks so much for being with me.
Wow, what an intro. Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you, David.
Thank you. I know our WAMC listeners are always happy to hear your voice, because I know in the many past years you've been a frequent visitor here and someone they love to hear both singing and speaking about music. So it's great to have you with us.
Thank you.
So tell me, I wanted to talk a little bit about your wonderful job as the artistic director of the vocal arts program of the Bard College Conservatory, which sounds like a mouthful because it is. But you've developed a really fabulous vocal program there. And I'm particularly interested in this because, of course, coming up within just about a week or less than a week, we're going to be featuring four of your amazing students on our subscription concert with the Albany Symphony. But tell me just a little bit about how that program began, because if I understand correctly, you founded it.
I was invited to come and create it. Leon Botstein and Robert Martin came to me. Gosh, it must have been something like 2004. They were just getting ready to begin this new conservatory at Bard, which has really grown. And we began this program for graduate vocal students in 2006, I guess it was.
And did they tell you kind of what they had in mind, or did they just kind of say, design what you like? Or
They gave me great freedom, actually. They first came to me asking if I would design an undergraduate program. And I have found over the years in my summer festival teaching and masterclass work that I'm especially intrigued with this age group just after undergraduate years. So a little bit older. You know, singers develop a little later.
Right. So
of course. Uh-huh. So I asked, I was really flattered, and I said, this sounds like a very intriguing idea, but I'd love to work with grad students, and they were very open to the idea. So it's a very small program. That's one of the greatest parts, in my opinion. They get a lot of attention. All of the faculty have, you know, close relationships with them and following their progress and working with them every week. And so it's really a total class right now of 15 students.
Right. I read somewhere that you accept up to 9 per year, and it's a 2-year program. Is that right? Or
that's correct.
That's a master's degree, right?
Right.
And what's so fabulous about Bard, for any of the listeners who don't know that much about the Bard College Conservatory, as you mentioned, Leon Botstein, the president of Bard College, and Bob Martin, who's the president I don't know what his exact title is, but he is the
director
of the conservatory, but also vice president of the college and various other aspects. They really got together and designed a very unique kind of conservatory, if I understand correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, but on the premise that every student in this music conservatory must also participate. Well, I don't know if this is true of your graduate program, but certainly for all the undergraduates who are in the conservatory, they also must be essentially full-time in the college. So they must have an area of focus outside of the conservatory. So what I love about it, being someone who really believes in university education and all that, is that at least at the undergraduate level, every kid who goes to the conservatory also has a great number of skills in sort of general liberal arts and or sciences. Is that the way it sort of was set up?
Exactly. It's actually a double major. So they receive degrees in two subjects, one in music and then in another school.
But in your program at the graduate level, it's different? Is it purely?
It is different because it's just a 2-year program and it's very much focused.
Right. And what's so fabulous about the undergraduate is Bob Martin, who's a wonderful cellist and was in a very celebrated string quartet for many years, also has a degree in philosophy, I think, and was going to Curtis Institute when he was a young man. At the same time, he was going, I think, to Haverford College and getting degrees at both schools. So it's really, I think, in a certain way based on his life experience that he feels that, you know, all musicians should be broadly educated, which is
right.
Wonderful. Yeah. And certainly for singers, that's essential, right? Because you all deal with poetry and text and history and culture so much of the time.
We do our best to bring all of those things into our program in the short 2 years that we have them with us. Certainly poetry and literature and words, really digging into all sorts of beautiful texts. It's a very important part of their work with us.
And so I assume in the program there are language coaches as well as vocal coaches and all manners of different kinds of training?
Yes, well, actually they have each semester they focus on a particular language. Right now they're working with French, so they have a language class, French language class, and also a separate class that's just focused on diction, French diction and phonetics.
Uh-huh, fantastic. And my understanding is that what's so great about your involvement and so special about it, I think, having had the incredible life experience that you have in so many genres of music and of performance, you're not just running the conservatory and the sort of inspirational leader, but you're actually in there teaching voice lessons, or at least coaching, or is that right? Or
I call it coaching. Uh-huh. They have their own applied voice teachers. So I coach with them, and some other faculty coach with them. Kayo Iwama, who's the associate director with me. So they're getting lots of ideas from all sides. But I don't teach voice kind of
per
technically,
se. Right.
In terms of sound production so much. Although I do dig in there every once in a while.
And I bet you know a good bit about it from your years of vocal training and vocal artistry. I was curious also in terms of for these young singers, because you have had such a phenomenal career, and what's so special about you for all of us who love and admire your artistry is that you have had an incredible career in opera, and I read somewhere that you've sung more than 300 nights at the Metropolitan, and by now it's probably many more, and obviously at opera houses all over the world, but you also are and have been one of the leading new music performers, as well as oratorio and essentially early music performers in the world. So you've managed really to wear a number of hats, which is not always that common among singers, is it? Many singers sort of specialize in one type of opera or oratorio.
I guess that's true. I just had a lot of interests, is just what that was all about, and I continue to really enjoy, especially working with composers who are writing brand new music with brand new musical voices. And I find it really fascinating to try to create something that they have in mind, that hasn't been created before. So, yes, I started out singing a lot of earlier music, and I was always interested in new music, but I think probably the bulk of what I'm doing right now is more 20th and 21st century work.
And I've always been very curious, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about this, that the people who tend to specialize in early music, in Baroque, or certainly pre-Romantic music, tend very often to be the people who are the leading new music singers and vice versa. Is that a voice type issue, or what accounts for that, that there's sort of this big chunk of about 100 plus years in the 19th century that sort of is reserved for a certain kind of singer, perhaps, and that the early music people and the new music people often are the same people?
It's true, and I'm not really sure why that is.
I mean, is it maybe a vocal purity thing that, early music demands such purity of vocal production and new music does as well? Or
It could be, have something to do with the kind of detail work. Although I would say that the styles that composers are writing in right now vary so much one from another. So it's very hard for me to generalize about them, but yeah, perhaps because the detail work that you do, I think, with a brand new piece is kind of different work than the work you do with pieces that carry so many expectations through the traditions of performance practice or something.
But
I don't know. It's a good question.
It is a curious thing because I've noticed it so frequently that the early music and the new music singers are often the same people. So while we're on that subject in terms of early music, and since you did come up through the early music movement in a certain way, on this program on the weekend, we're featuring four of your fabulous singers, a quartet of singers, in a very powerful and beautiful Bach cantata, the cantata number 63, one of the Christmas cantatas. Can you talk to us a little bit about Bach cantatas and maybe that piece or about, you know, what makes them special? Because I know you have incredible experience doing that. I should also mention that we're doing some arias. Each singer is singing an aria from the Messiah. So we have Bach and Handel together with a beautiful dose of George Syntakis, a colleague of yours who's a professor at Bard, a double violin concerto of his kind of in the middle. But tell us a little bit about Bach and the cantatas, if you would.
Well, first of all, I applaud you for putting these pieces together.
Somebody asked me. Someone said, well, how'd you put that? That's not a typical Christmas program. I said, our audience is not a typical Christmas audience. It's really a much broader audience. And what's beautiful about these pieces, even though the Bach is ostensibly about Christmas and the Messiah is ostensibly about the Messiah, but not about Christmas, it's not a Christmas program at all. It's just a really deep, beautiful music program that sort of has a nod to the season and has this wonderful Syntakis piece in the middle. So it counterbalances the two Baroque works.
Yes, yeah. I think it's a gorgeous program.
Oh, so I hope it will be.
I'm
very
excited about it. I can't wait to hear the whole thing.
Well, we're excited to hear your progeny, your students, your beautiful students.
Well, they're very excited. You know, this is a big deal for them, and we've really enjoyed all of our conversations and work in preparation for this event. And the Cantata 63... I actually, it was one of my very first professional jobs, actually. I'm just realizing that I have that in common with the students.
Uh-huh.
So it has beautiful arias and duet, and I think that it's actually requiring some rather deep and subtle kind of approach to the text, and as well, I mean, there's some very more extended recitative passages.
It's kind of a strange one, and it's got big, they're not really chorales, but almost big sort of show choruses at the beginning and the end, and many more duets and recitatives than most of the other cantatas. So it's kind of a unique and original one. It's got four trumpets, so I think it's often considered as sort of the high watermark of the Christmas cantatas, leaving aside the big, the Christmas oratorio. But it's an amazing, dramatic kind of piece.
Yeah.
And I guess climbing inside, it's amazing that Bach could generate, you know, one of these a week, essentially, for so many years.
An incredible
thing. Yeah. Tell me, I had maybe a last question is you know, since you're now passing on so much of your knowledge and wisdom to a next generation of singers, how has the world changed? Are you having to prepare your young singers for a very different world from the one you entered? Or are the skills required the same, or are they different, or are the opportunities dramatically different?
I find one of the most amazing and inspiring and gratifying things about my work at Bard is that it's not even that I feel I'm passing on so much as hopefully giving to the students a kind of skill set or tools so that they can really create their own musical worlds You know, I have found that this generation of young musicians is so imaginative and creative. They are really skilled in many different styles, and they are kind of ravenous in terms of their interests and looking at new combinations of kind of creating musical opportunities for themselves.
So they're really
entrepreneurial. I'm much more interested in kind of having them take the ball and run with it in a direction I can't even imagine myself, that only they can really think of. So I have much less interest in trying to guide them through a career similar to my own. I want them to do what comes most organically, kind of to themselves.
And that's beautiful, because I know so many teachers, particularly in the instrumental world, who, you know, teach this concerto and then that concerto and then that concerto, and by the time they finish the 10 concertos, they consider the student finished, and all they've really done is taught them these concertos. They haven't really, as you say, sort of given them the toolbox or the skill set to attain anything or to solve any problems. So that's a beautiful way to do it. And of course, you know, you actually crossed over a great deal, not just between different genres of what we, I guess, unwillingly call classical music. It's not my favorite term, but you've also made those beautiful jazz standard albums that I remember. I think I have all of them. And do your students also tend to cross over into pop? And are some of them sort of exploring far reaches?
Some of them do. It really depends on their musical upbringing, and that's certainly where my interests came in the with American kind of songbook repertoire. Was really what I grew up with. I didn't grow up with classical music, so I came a little later to classical music. And so I think that's really important that we all kind of be true to our musical upbringing. And so it varies, but I think that there is a much kind of more open-minded attitude to looking across at these styles, you know, that don't have much in common with each other, and people can call that crossover or whatever they want to call it. But I think that there's a much greater variety that students are exposed to.
Right, which is a wonderful thing, to pursue one's own passions. I think that's what every artist ought to do, creative or recreative. And I hope sometime in the future we can talk about some of the specific living composers you've worked with and championed, because they're such a beautiful group, John Harbison and Osvaldo Goldershov and so many others that I feel very close to, and that you've brought such magnificent pieces of theirs into the world, and that's a great thing.
I would love to talk about that.
Good. We'll make that a future conversation, but for now, we'll look forward to hearing your beautiful four young singers on our concert on the weekend in Bach and Handel, and thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
It was a pleasure, David. Thank you.
That was the Albany Symphony Orchestra's Maestro David Allen Miller speaking with Don Upshaw. More information about this weekend's ASO concerts at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall in Troy, New York, can be found on our website, wamc.org/roundtable.